Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
I'm seriously,
what's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 20, week 14. Parts 1 and 2. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson. What's going on, Colin?
Combo pod. We're back from the dead. Here to sweep up after the last ranking just got put out.
Yeah, we're sitting here. The last ranking just was released, so we'll go over that. Apologies again for part 2 of the podcast. We had a corrupted audio file. We tried to recover it. Of course, we hit our Moneyline Underdog Parlay. I had Pitt, and Colin had Central Michigan. That's just how the world works. But we were trying to fix it, and then I was away for the weekend and had some things come up where we couldn't even re-record, otherwise we would have if it was just any other weekend. So apologies for that. We both had good weekends, though, overall. We'll recap the weekend, so hopefully you're following on the Sports Action app. But let's start with before we get into the college football playoffs, you had – you know, good call on Arkansas again. I know I was on them as well. They did cover, and they had Bielema go out, told him as he was going off the field, which I don't think would have been a surprise to him or anybody else. But your boys won't be going to a bowl. Who are you looking for as a coach? Yeah, do you have a positive outlook on where this is headed?
Yeah, I have a great – I mean, we were taking a nosedive, so, and I would rather be taking a nosedive, or I'd be rather pointing up than just kind of flying steady, sucking, winning 5-6 games a year. I'm actually really happy with the way things are going. This interim AD that we got, she's got experience with the NCAA. She's got experience at Indiana, kind of doing the same type of thing. So she knows what she's doing. They've hired two separate search firms, which I think is hilarious. They got one going to get us an AD in the next 2 days, and they've got one on the coaching hire. But when it's all said and done, the list looks like this. Gus Malzahn, pending what happens in the SEC championship. Mike Norvell, pending, you know, if Gus says no, then we'll get, you know, done with the Central Florida game and the Memphis game. We'll give Norvell a call. And then Brett Venables. And everybody says, well, how come, you know, what about Leak? What about Gundy? What about some Neil Brown from Troy? You know, those are all great names, and they're all doing their own thing. But I know that the three that were, you know, some of the guys that have inside knowledge on the program, it's Malzahn, Norvell, and then Venables. And people say, well, where'd you come up with Venables? He came to the Little Rock Touchdown Club. We have the Broyles Award, which, is given to the most outstanding coordinator in the nation. And that was named after Frank Broyles, who was the old, you know, longtime AD at Arkansas. And Venables came in and gave a speech, and all the boosters at Arkansas just foamed at the mouth at this guy, which they should anyways because of what he's done in the college football playoff for Clemson and what he'd done previously for OU. So he's on the list because of that. Mike Norvell at Memphis, he's got ties. He used to play at Central Arkansas, home of the Scottie Pippen, the Bears, the Purple Field. He played there. He coached there. So that's his Arkansas ties. And then Gus Malzahn, I could talk for a half hour about how deeply rooted he is in Northwest Arkansas. But that's the three. I'm happy with those three. If we get something crazy out of the loop, something that isn't fall into that line, then shit really broke down on Saturday after all three of these coaches finished their games.
I mean, but what's Malzahn's incentive besides, I mean, can you give him that much more money? Yeah. Are you going to give him discounts at Walmart up in Northwest Arkansas? What's the name?
Well, his wife actually still attends church up in Northwest Arkansas. So, I mean, they have family there. They grew up there. He coached high school football at a couple different high schools there for over a decade. He's Northwest Arkansas grown. It's home to him. And the problem with Auburn is, and I'm friends with a lot of Auburn alum that are my age, and we talk about this all the time, is he's always on a one-game coaching basis with Auburn. Like, you have to beat LSU or you're going to be fired. You have to beat Texas A&M or you're fired. You have to win the Iron Bowl or you're fired. And there's a lot of boosters, and there's some board of trustees that have made it very publicly known that he's a glorified coordinator, and he wasn't the reason that they've ever had any success. And the whole thing about getting his offensive coordinator up in the booth versus down on the field and taking the play calling away from him just a short 11 weeks ago, Gus isn't comfortable down there, and some of the staff and some of the brass, I should say, down there, they're not comfortable with him. And if you can go home and win 7 games a year for a decade, and recruit in a state that you're deeply rooted in, it's home. And you can't put a price tag, really. I mean, he's going to get anything he wants, but you can't really put a price tag on going home and doing your thing in your own backyard.
That's fair. Yeah, so I think that you're headed in a better direction than where you were, which is all that you can do. To cover my Ravens real quick, they're down. I know we've been talking on the pod for 155-1. They're down to 75-1. Mm-hmm. They won again. Schedule's favorable. Best special teams and defense in the NFL. I mean, if they can just find a way to throw a pass with someone other than their punter, they can be dangerous. But they should get to the playoffs, which is all we want there. Overall in the NFL, it's been a weird year. I mean, it was favorites went 9-3 again. I mean, favorites are just finding ways to cover. They're 45-21-5 against the spread over the last 6 weeks, six consecutive winning Sundays. I should say that's on just on Sundays. You know, but I had the Giants. I mean, and if you had, but say you were just in New York and you bet both New York teams. I mean, both of those beats were brutal. I know we had them in the Super Contest as well. So yeah, if it's been a crazy run for favorites in the NFL, especially pre-December. I mean, we haven't even got December yet, where favorites usually fare a little better. I think my favorite note from the NFL is that the Chiefs, who are just in free fall. I mean, they look like they were going to have home field throughout in the AFC playoffs. They are now 30-1 to win the Super Bowl. You know who's down? You know who's down to 30-1? The Chargers.
Chargers. Yeah, the Chargers are too, and they have the easiest schedule to finish up, I think.
Yeah, I'm still shocked by that price. It's an overreaction. I love the Chargers. The thing is that the Chiefs own the Chargers. I don't know when the last time the Chargers beat the Chiefs, but they're one game back, and the Chiefs already beat them, and the Chiefs play them at home. So I mean, they have a huge advantage. I'm shocked that I think the Chargers are better than the Chiefs, but in order for them to jump them, it's going to take a lot. But the Chiefs are, I've never seen a team do this kind of, mid season shift without, significantly losing, their best player or quarterback or something.
This wild card weekend that's shaping up, it's the weekend before the national championship game. It's shaping up to at least in the AFC to be one of the who's these names, like you're not used to seeing these names in the playoffs. It's shaping up to be one of those years where it's like, we're used to seeing Tom Savage on the wild card weekend and we could always fade him and easily make money. But it's such an ugly list of teams that are going to make that wild card weekend that weekend before the national championship.
I love it. Yeah, it's usually Tom Savage and or a car or against Andy Dalton, right? Isn't that
always
the Saturday afternoon game?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the Ravens play Sunday at I don't care. Take me to Kansas City or Jacksonville. I don't care. So anyway, that's NFL. I don't really love anything on this week's card, to be honest. It's fairly unappetizing, but we'll have to dig for something. So keep an eye out.
What we should comment on is, are you and I going to flow with the stream of favorites or, you have to talk me off the ledge to get off my dogs. I'm always looking for a dog in the NFL, and it's just not been going well the last month at all. I just don't know if we just lay down and roll with the favorites for 1 week.
No, I mean, the thing is, we haven't been, I'm like hovering around 500. NFL is one of my strongest sports. I'm hovering around 500, but and that's what we've been in the Super Contest. We can't get any momentum, but I look at it. A lot of it's just like, a team turns it over late and then the other team kicks a field goal because they couldn't get a first day. Like, we're not even that far off. I mean, I looked last week, I had the Giants. I mean, they cover that game 99 out of 100 times, right? The Jets, I mean, for the Super Contest, thank God I teased them with the Ravens. I mean, they cover 99, that game 99 of 100 times. I mean, you have... They end up Carolina has to kick a field goal because they couldn't run the clock out. They also got a punt return for a touchdown, a fumble return for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. I mean, favorites are just they're finding ways late. I mean, New England found a way to cover late. It's pretty wild how some of these teams are finding ways.
And who's the dog that covers? Brett Hundley, of course.
Well, of course. The Steelers can't. They never get. They're not up for bad teams. It's shocking. I should say it's not shocking, but yeah, I think that there's the dogs are going to start to have some. I mean, you're starting to see some overinflated favorites. I mean, Jacksonville now is laying 10 all of a sudden. I mean, come on. All right. So anyway, let's move on to. Well, first, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. It was great. Grandma, we deep fried the turkeys. We had Arkansas style buffet. We had the Tito's gallon out next to the small TV in the kitchen while the Lions made me drink a little bit extra. I am glad the Chargers won because I think that's the first Thanksgiving game I've won in probably 3 years.
Did you have your corn thing, whatever, the corn?
Yeah, stuff? Yeah, we had the corn casserole. It's like, you know, it's like 2,000 calories of this corn inside this breading thing. It's just like, it's a corn casserole. I don't even know what the ingredients are. I don't care. I just inhale it.
Yeah, that's, I was thinking of you because there was this, a couple different casseroles that I was down south for my first Southern Thanksgiving that I had. Some of them, I didn't even know what they were, but they were all good, and my girl's a good cook, so.
You want to get into your whole meat thing? This whole meat on Friday, which I agree, right? I mean, Friday is the Sammy, the sandwiches with the meat and the everything that's left over, but, like, you were so anti-meat on Friday, or on Thursday, and I get the whole Friday meat thing, but the whole no meat on Thursday?
Yeah, here's the thing. There's this for Turkey Day is for sides, and the next day is for turkey. This is and ham. Here's a number of reasons why. Number one, there is always too much turkey and ham, right? So this is if you're somewhere where you have access to leftovers. I think this changes if you don't. But the sides tend to, and the I love the sides, but the sides tend to not be as plentiful as the turkey and ham, right? So you got to get the sides in while you can. Like I didn't get these stuffed mushrooms, and I love mushrooms, and I'm still like just distraught about it. But I'm not distraught that I didn't get another helping of turkey, because for the next 2 days, there's some points I would just open the fridge to grab a beer, and then I would just grab a slab of ham or a slab of turkey and eat it. So
right,
you know, but the sides are gone, and they're gone that night. So I fill up on the sides, knowing that there's going to be turkey and ham there, knowing that I can make sandwiches with it, knowing that I'm going to be eating that for the next couple of days. So, you know, and then I can let that flavor soak in. Like I love leftovers in general, especially, you know, being Italian, pasta is always better the next day, always better. So that's my argument. I'll put some little turkey and ham in there, mainly just to be like, I'm a man. If I could go without it, I would. The one thing I will eat back home, I didn't have access to this year. I will always eat a big turkey leg. I'll grab the actual leg and eat that like just like a complete savage. But that's my stance on it.
The Richard Sherman leg.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my stance. Give me the sides. Give me the casseroles, the mac and cheese, the mashed potatoes. Give me all of that, and then I'll take the meat on day two and three.
Yeah, it was good for me to eat 7 hours before I saw Nick Fitzgerald's injury. So that was brutal.
Yeah. So it was a good Thanksgiving, but I'm tired of turkey and ham. I can't. I'm over it for a little bit. So I've had my fill. Let's get into the playoffs. We'll start with the playoffs. So I can actually admit this as a sports fan. I consider myself a diehard sports fan that watches every sport, you know, outside of the NBA and soccer. And I've never watched the playoff show, not once in my life. I didn't even watch it tonight. I mean, what are they going to do? I don't really care. I know what it's pretty much going to be. I'll see it on Twitter.
Right.
I've never watched it, but after seeing what the actual teams are in the playoffs, and if you're living under a rock and you haven't heard it, there's another reason you'll hear it a billion times. Clemson is now number one. By the way, I'm glad I felt comfortable enough to fade Clemson again. I told you there was a lock on the podcast, the lost files that we'll never hear. Auburn is number two. Oklahoma is number three. And Wisconsin jumps into number four. But again, it doesn't really matter. Like Miami's seven and Clemson's one, but that's a quarterfinal game. So I don't really care that Clemson. I mean, the only difference is that, you know, Clemson might get a more favorable matchup, but I don't know. I mean, because they'll be the one if they win. But Miami, if they win, I assume they might be the four. You know, what most people are going to talk about all year. Again, Auburn is two, Georgia is six. It doesn't matter. Winner of that game is getting in. And then Oklahoma TCU is a semi quarter game. That's a weird way to say it, but a half of a quarter game, because if Oklahoma wins, they're in, it looks like. And if TCU wins, they're not. And you probably have an Alabama jump in where it gets really interesting. The most interesting thing that can happen is if a favorite, it's the most likely outcome, is if Ohio State beats Wisconsin. You know, what do you do with the two loss Ohio State team that is sitting at number eight, I believe? Hope I don't have that wrong. So if they win, are they jumping an Alabama team that's at five that's going to have a static resume, and Ohio State's going to be adding that win? I don't know. That's the question. Curious to get your thoughts. I don't really care about the rankings.
So, yeah, I don't watch the – I do watch the ranking show, but I really kind of treat it – there's not a lot of people I watch on TV and I actually take some info from. Like, I don't absorb it and think those are my thoughts, because it seems like everybody has a damn agenda. Like, you know, Joey Galloway and Kirk Herbstreit graduated from Ohio – or they went to Ohio State, right? And Booger's on there to support the SEC. And, you know, Reese went to Alabama. Even, I mean, they're all trying to – they're not trying to be biased, but – you could tell by the tone of their voice and their arguments that they kind of all have a little foot in with you know, what their background is. So what I really watch it for is when the chairman comes on and he talks about why he did what, you know, what they did. And for me, it's really confusing when I see Alabama slotted at number five and they've got Ohio State down at number eight. And then he comes on to the show and he says, listen, we have a criteria. We talk about everything and we value conference champions, you know, above one loss non-conference champions. And so what he's done is the committee has slotted Alabama five, which you think they would slide up to four, but they're going to value Ohio State as a conference champion. I think they laid the groundwork tonight to get Ohio State in if they beat Wisconsin and leave Alabama at number five. That's the way I read it tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, if that happens, it looks like that'll be, they'll be four or five regardless, one way or the other. Yeah, I mean, the only, and if you're Team Chaos, it's a hard card to play in today's college football world with all the money that's out there. I guess you need Alabama, Clemson, Auburn, Wisconsin, Oklahoma to become ineligible over the next week. They got to have some scandal break, so maybe you need complete chaos now. Sorry, because you're at number, where's UCF now? They just don't move. 13, 12?
14, I think. But
man, it's sad. So,
yeah, somebody, so there was some Twitter thing going on about how the current system's broke because a group of five will never be able to make the playoff. Here's an idea: play a Power Five, like a real Power Five program. Like, turn, you know, I mean, cut out the FCS, cut out the UMasses of the world, and you say, well, they won't play us. Well, that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go play them, and you know, you're going to have to schedule this years in advance. I mean, if you want to, don't complain. I don't want to hear about how the system is broke. It's not broke. UCF wouldn't beat any of these top eight teams, in my opinion.
Yeah, in all fairness, they did have Georgia Tech. I mean, it's not a great game, but then they had a weather, and then they had to play Austin Peay instead. But yeah, you're right. Just to sum up the playoffs, I mean, you have two quarterfinal games: the SEC championship, winners in; ACC championship, winners in. Assuming, you know, that, I don't know, things could be different. And then you have, if Wisconsin wins the Big Ten, they're in. If Oklahoma wins the Big 12, I'm assuming they're in. I don't see Alabama jumping them because they're going to get quality wins, right?
Yeah, yeah. Alabama, I'm not a Bama backer at all, but we know that. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, their strength of schedule is 93 in the country.
Right. It's pathetic.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're rooting for chaos, if you want Oklahoma and Wisconsin to lose, like, so you're going to get an SEC winner, an ACC winner. If Wisconsin loses and Oklahoma loses, you're probably then going to get Ohio State and Bama. That's probably what the committee wants. Jesus,
absolutely,
to be honest. Yeah.
They want them both in so bad. I guess
if Wisconsin loses and
OU starts the day losing to TCU, that's how you get them both in, and that's. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some crazy beef ref bullshit Big 12 at noon on Saturday where TCU is beating OU just to get these two teams in. That's the team chaos craziness in my head.
I mean, yeah, that would be, you would have Clemson, Bama, round one if Clemson beats Miami, and Auburn, Ohio State. I mean, that'd be pretty sick. Mm-hmm. Or Georgia, Ohio State.
Out in the Rose Bowl.
So we'll see. We'll be back when these get released early next week, and we'll get into all these games here shortly. And then in regards to the podcast overall, we'll make sure that we have you covered on bowls from a preview perspective on the app, the Sports Action app. But in regards to podcasts, we'll also be doing them. So it's not going to be, you know, even this week, we can't do our normal format, which is why we combined parts one and two. You know, there's not like look aheads. There's a lot smaller of a card. We'll take it on a week-by-week basis, but for the most part, we'll try and do one at the beginning of the week and then cover the bowls that week. And then I'm thinking that we'll have a piece, an article that comes out that covers the bowls, you know, for your reading and viewing pleasure each day. But that's still TBD. But we'll definitely still be keeping up with these podcasts. And we'll have a, Jordan and I are in discussions to get a college basketball one going. And then Colin and I will make sure that we keep momentum on this, at least in the off season. So, you know, it might be sporadic at best until we can get into the previews, but we'll make sure that we get some things out there, maybe get some cool guests and things like that. So let's just get into a quick weekend recap. I know that both had a successful weekend on the app. We cleaned up on Friday, cleaned up the max slate. I still can't figure out that Buffalo's team makes one of the oddest line moves I've seen. I thought the line was going to come down. It goes up 5 points. Buffalo wins anyway. But let me start with my favorite game of the weekend and best call. Best call, yeah, no one's ever going to believe me, but I had Pitt and I had Pitt money line. And I changed it last second on the podcast on the stupidest premise ever. I said Miami is Clemson of last year. And they are. I mean, then they lost to Pitt. So that means Miami, I guess, is winning the national championship. But Pitt got the outright win there, but I had plus 14. I know you did as well. Favorite game was UCF-USF. I had no action on the game with that. I mean, that was insane, those last few minutes back and forth. It was just fun to watch. How about you? Favorite game, best call?
Yeah, favorite game by far for me was Washington. And the reason is because we had a newsletter come out, and I made a bold statement that Washington was an easy pick over Washington State. At that point in the day, ULM had screwed me pretty bad, and the CW9 was sitting at 4-4. Washington, never in doubt, went for the jugular, even with some of their best players hurt. Just went out there and just blew Washington State off the ball. It wasn't even close. Not only was it my favorite game, just in the fact that, you know, we had newsletter publishings that I was back in Washington. CW9 had a whole write-up behind Washington. My first future I placed this year back in May was when Five Dimes released Stanford plus 385 to win the Pac-12 North. That sealed that up too. So it was a really big game for me, and I'm really glad that, you know, it was never in doubt. It was never in doubt. Best call? I had Pitt circled for weeks also. I wish the weather would have been more helpful, but I'm going to have to go with Auburn because I had multiple write-ups everywhere talking about Alabama. They're not what everybody thinks they are. About how beat up the defense is, about how, you know, they are not controlling the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball, about how they're ranking worse than 90th in adjusted sack rate, and that if Auburn can, you know, limit Calvin Ridley, that they're going to get, you know, Jalen Hurts on the run, and they're going to be able to just eat him alive. And that is exactly what happened. That score was by 12, but it was way more than that. So my best call is going to have to be Auburn.
Yeah, I was shocked by not necessarily the result, but how, and I think this might, you know, this is a result of not only the injuries Alabama's been dealing with, but because of their lack of strength of schedule. You know, they've played such a weak schedule. They haven't been in these, like, close games against elite teams that they weren't. I've never seen a Saban team that mentally, you know, underprepared in a close game. I mean, the snaps. They couldn't snap the ball. They're going offsides on punts. I mean, they were just making so many, you know, errors that you normally don't see an Alabama team make, especially in November. But I mean, I can't imagine being at the Alabama practice this week.
The signs were there for me. I mean, I watched that Colorado State game, and they were Nick Stevens was able to push it up the push tempo and push around Bama all day with that offense of theirs, and then Mississippi State game, both you and I, we both had cowbell, and it was easy to see they controlled the line of scrimmage against Bama. It's just that Bama never had a schedule that had anybody decent enough to really take him to the woodshed, and that's finally what happened.
Yeah, by the way, imagine if the playoffs, they potentially could have happened if they changed on that stupid replay where you can replay 12 men, but you can't replay the offensive penalty. That has to change somehow. Because I mean, they came up 1 yard short. Imagine if they get that first down and score. I mean, that would have been insane. But anyway, let's get into before we get into the rundown of the conference championships, I'll say get into worst call and bet regret. Worst call, clearly Georgia Tech. They got smoked. Never close. I had some hope at the beginning, but they got right out of the building. And then my bet regret is Clemson. I don't know why I went back there. I mean, I hate them. Fuck Kansas too. So, how about you?
My biggest regret is that this rant that I had on Charlotte last week, and then they actually covered, and then, you know, it's in the lost files. So no, worst call was Rutgers. Had them in the CW9. It was 19-7 at the end of the third quarter. Sparty goes on a 21-0 fourth quarter run. Just embarrassing way to end Rutgers 4-8 season, where they cover most of their games. So, you know, I'll be looking at their schedule next year, and maybe we can get something out of Chris Ash and his team. Bet regret, I got to go NFL. I mean, I actually had a really good day on the app. I think it was something stupid, like 15-3. But my bet regret is the Jets. Woke up Sunday morning after a tremendous day, and I said, Jets is in my super contest. I've been wanting to play them all week. I see it's steam from 4.5 up to 6. They led by 2 late in the game, and then the Carolina defense just took them apart, and I wanted to throw up. I've been wanting to throw up for days after that Jets game. So hate to go NFL, but it's still sitting with me a couple days later.
Yeah, I luckily had a rare one of the times you tease and you feel so brilliant. So I teased the Ravens when they were at 7.5 down to 1.5, mm-hmm. and I teased the Jets from 4.5 to 10.5. So it was it worked out
you
well.
You crossed 2 key numbers. No one's going to argue with that.
Yeah, I know. So, but what was the first? Oh, your lot to Charlotte versus FAU. Charlotte had no business covering that game, by the way.
Dirty.
FAU so couldn't dirty. Get in from the 1. They're second and goal from the 1, and then they ran it, no. And then that happened before. Their last 4 drives, they were in Charlotte territory, 2 first and goals, and they didn't score at all. I don't think they scored in the second half or they scored early in the third quarter, and that was it.
Yep, that was it, and it was enough. I know the files lost, but what did I say last week? You said, are they actually going to score? And I said, no, they just need to keep from having 22 scored on them. So,
yeah, I should have joined you. Well, I'm also glad I didn't join you. You almost tried to talk me onto East Carolina, who I saw was down 80-0 or something at the half. Yeah. But yeah, good call there, and you put out a winning week in CW9. So let's get into the way that we'll do this. We'll go through the conference championships. And then we'll have a 3-and-out this week. We'll do our playoff predictions just ahead of time before we know. We'll go through the Sun Belt because it's the 9 conference championships, and then the Sun Belt plays all these weird games this week. Some of them matter, some of them don't because they don't have a conference championship. So we'll go through that real quick, and then we'll see if we can maybe throw out a Moneyline parlay that'll lose because this file won't get lost. So let's start with Stanford at USC. USC's laying 4, over under 58.5. This is the only weekday game this week. It's on Friday night. Interesting thing here is that these teams played earlier in the year. Stanford actually had a bye before that game and lost 42-24 at USC, although you can't really look at it as your standard bye. I mean, they're coming back from Australia, so it's not like you were playing in the States. You're losing a couple days there anyway. But USC actually has the bye this time around. Stanford has the revenge. Really interesting thing to keep in mind is that most people will say, hey, it's hard to beat a team twice in a year. Well, if you look back at the 20 times in between Power 5 teams that they've played in a rematch in the conference championship game in the same season, the team that won the first meeting has won the conference championship 14 out of 20 times, over 70%. What I think that says is that, you know, this isn't the NFL. You can't add players. You are what you are. Unless there's weird fluky turnovers where the result wasn't, you know, necessarily just, or, you know, you either have added new players, you know, so say you have a new quarterback coming, or you had injuries then, or you're dealing with injuries now, and the rosters look differently as a result, then it could matter. But a lot of times you're not going to be able to, you know, address a glaring mismatch that might have driven the result the first time around, the second time around. So that's something to keep in mind, because you always hear it's hard to beat a team twice. What can happen, you know, in the NFL, I think that comes into play a lot more when, you know, the revenge angle, when the game doesn't mean as much to one team. But this is conference championships. The motivation is going to be there on both sides. What do you see here in Stanford, USC? Do you see any value on either side or the total?
Yeah, it's still a little bit of value. I made this number USC -5 in the Sunday morning coffee column. I logged into Five Dimes Sunday morning and saw that it was -1. So I immediately hopped onto that. You know, I think we're currently sitting at about 3.5, 4, might be some buyback down to 3. So I definitely think there's value in the USC side. This is a battle of USC, who's one of the most efficient teams in the country, but not very explosive, against a Stanford team that's not very efficient, but extremely explosive. So I love what USC has done this year against Heisman caliber players. So if you go deep into their box score and you look at what's been going on, when they take on somebody like a Bryce Love, or they're going up against Arizona and they're going against our boy Khalil Tate, what they do is USC runs Ronald Jones III. They run him. They give him 25 plus carries in the game. That moves the chains. It plays keep away. It eats the clock. They get a lot of yards. They always get a score out of the end of it because they're one of the best teams when it comes to finishing drives. USC's formula against these teams that have really dynamic explosiveness on their offensive side of the ball is to keep the ball away from them. And I think that's going to be the same game plan right here. 2 weeks of rest, which is something that they've desperately needed the entire year. I've got USC minus one. No way I hedge, no matter what number this gets to. I think USC will win. If you want to back the USC side, I'd look for some buyback on Stanford. Otherwise, maybe try to catch it live. But I would play it up to five. I had somebody ask me on Twitter today. I'd play it up to five, which is where I had the number.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, if you're looking for a reason to like Stanford, is, and we've been saying all year that we want Costello in at quarterback, mm-hmm. right? And I think that any time he came in, he was clearly the better quarterback. But last week in particular, the way that Stanford finished that game, Costello finished that game, I believe, with some beautiful touchdown pass. I mean, he only threw for about 176 yards. He threw for four touchdowns on 14 of 22 passing. He looked like he was getting a lot more confident throwing over the middle of the field into coverage. So if you're looking for an angle with Stanford, just know that he didn't play the first time around. It was Chris. We've been saying it's terrible. Stell's in probably took a lot of confidence out of that, that fourth quarter in particular against Notre Dame when they really pulled away. But I would tend to agree with you that I lean USC here as well. The second game that I have here is Memphis at UCF. UCF is laying 7 here. You know, there's 7 of the 9 conference title games have featured a rematch. None of them in the regular season were decided by single digits. This one, Memphis, UCF won earlier in the year at home, where this game will be again, 40-13. Over-under is 82.5. I wouldn't play the under. I'd only play the over. I'm playing the total here. What do you see here?
Yeah, that thing got up to, 85 before. It kind of got some buyback down, but I don't know who's – I don't know if people are shaping numbers or what. I wouldn't want to hold an under ticket here. So both teams are going to explode offensively against the other team. Both of them have defenses that are prone to giving up big plays, and everybody knows UCF and Memphis are prone to making big plays happen. So both teams have gone over 4 of the last 5 games. I power rated this at 6.5. So I don't think that there's, I think, if it's 7.5, you probably want to take Memphis. I think if it's 6.5, you probably want to take Central Florida, because the same way that I felt about the South Florida game, which I had that game at 7. And I said, you just want to get the best of the number, best of 7, because I see this game playing out exactly like that one.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that those teams played, well, it was a canceled game that was remade late in September. And, the Memphis offense has been explosive all year, but they are on another level the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Granted, they played SMU and ECU, Tulsa before that, and Tulane. So the one thing that I'm worried about with them is they've been rolling. I mean, they've scored 66 and 70 the last 2 weeks. But they haven't played, when's the last time they played a good team? I guess you could say the same thing with Central Florida, but they've just been able to move the ball so easily. At least Central Florida has that game versus South Florida last week where they had to face some resistance and were in a competitive game. But I don't remember the last time Memphis won a game by less. I mean, I think it was a month and a half ago, less than they were in a one possession game. So right. I think that UCF pulls it out, but it's close. And I agree with you that if you can get over 7, I'd look at Memphis here, but line looks to be fair. I don't know if I want to play it over 82.5, but I can see both. I easily see both teams getting to 40.
This is one of those games where the bet, I'm playing it live on Bet Online. It's up to 125, the total.
Six minutes.
All right. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, now it's time to hit the under maybe.
Yep. Here's the largest margin from the first meeting of the conference championship rematches, moving on to North Texas at Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic here, last time I saw it, I'm not sure if it changed, and this is in the Conference USA Championship. Florida Atlantic was laying 10.5, and the over-under was 74. I know that you mentioned on the podcast previously that you would look the over here no matter what. The first matchup, Florida Atlantic again, which they won at home, and this will be it in Florida Atlantic again. They won 69-31. So they rolled, and they almost put up 70 points against North Texas. I mean, North Texas is a lot. Their offense looks a lot different now than it did then. I will say that. That was in, I would say it was about a month and a week ago, and their offense has been getting consistently better each week. If you're looking for one reason to back the Mean Green, but curious what you see here.
Yeah, I'm back in the Mean Green here, definitely. I love the 11. I actually have this game power rated as a 7, so I definitely think the spread is too high. North Texas has major advantages in the efficiency department, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They can. I know the slate of teams that they've been playing lately has been pretty subpar on the FBS level, but I mean, Florida Atlantic's defense is nothing to write home about. I think North Texas is going to be able to score at will. And keep up with this, and then I would be more on the I wouldn't know what to do if the spread was 7, but at 11 I'm easily taking North Texas in this spot. I think it's back and forth all day. North Texas ranks 11th in passing success rate. They recently lost their star running back Jeffrey Wilson, but that really wasn't a problem against Rice because Nick Smith, the backup, comes in. He goes for 178 rushing yards. This offense is a machine right now, and FAU is too. But I think this time North Texas is going to be able to keep up with them, or at least keep it within 11.
Fair enough. I would agree. I think this line, a lot of value with North Texas. I was expecting it to be similar to Memphis UCF. I actually thought the total was going to be higher. So I thought that this would be closer to 80 and the spread would be 7. I thought this was going to look similar to Memphis UCF. Do you still like the over? Do you think it just...
Yeah, I'll definitely play the over. I don't see any reason... Look at the box scores for these two teams. I mean, how is this thing not going to hit 100? I mean, it's crazy.
Yep. So moving on to the MAC conference championship. So the MAC's not playing. I'm surprised they're not playing this on like Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning. They're playing this on a normal time, I think on Saturday. So these kids are probably gonna be really confused. But Toledo is laying 21. And they won the first matchup 48-21. So the first time they played, they won by 27 points, over under 56.5. Toledo's been waiting for this one. Did they? No, that was more Max team that I was on. I got a bad line with Toledo last week, but they rolled. I think they roll again. But what do you see here?
It's just another year where the steam in the MAC games just goes completely the wrong way. It's like
meaningless.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's just trying to fool you into a number, and if you're a chaser, then the MAC's not the conference you want to be playing. No. And as far as confused, there's only going to be 15 kids in the stands like a typical MAC game anyway, so they'll be the ones that are confused.
Yes,
the game's on Saturday. So, all right, so I like Akron in this game. The number's too high. Again, I make this 16. S&P Plus makes this 15.5. So the 21.5 certainly has value. It's not due to a quarterback being out or anything because Cato Nelson's been just fine. He's been doing great. Toledo does have some advantages in the efficiency department, but Akron is definitely the more explosive team. So what that means is when Woodside is able to drive this offense and have like 11 plays and get a touchdown, Akron's going to be able to do the same thing and get points up on the board in four plays and in half the plays. So, Akron's been a different team their last four games. They have a different quarterback. So I know Stuck mentioned earlier about how these are the same teams, usually the same players. But for Akron, it is a little bit different on the offensive side of the ball than the last time they played in late October when they got drummed by 27 points, where Toledo almost lapped them in yards. That could happen again, but 21.5, too high. I have this at 16. I'm definitely siding with Akron.
Here's the thing, though, is that the Woodson he's suspended, but he's doubtful. He's not ruled out yet. So, and he failed a drug test. He's listed, I think, officially as doubtful. But if he plays, I think that would actually be worse, possibly, for Akron. I mean, because Akron's been playing well with Nelson, but it's something to keep in mind. If you're going to bet it, there's an outside chance that, you know, they could say, okay, we're going to get Woodson. We're going to have Woodson play here. Just something to note, because he's not officially ruled out yet. But I would agree with your thoughts. I think the line looks too high, but I'm not in a rush to bet Akron here. Next game, we'll get into another Power 5 conference championship rematch, and that would be TCU at Oklahoma. Oklahoma is laying 7, right around a touchdown. I think it's actually I think I've seen. Did it tick down at all?
Yeah, it's starting to tick down. It's starting to juice out like a penny. It's down to 7 minus 100. So
over under 63. Oklahoma won this game the first time around, again in Oklahoma, 38-20. I believe the last time Oklahoma went to the college football playoff, they played. You remember this game? They played TCU at home. This wasn't a conference championship, but they had to win it. And then they were up like 31-10 at the half. And then Baker Mayfield went out with a concussion. And then TCU came all the way back. And then Gary Patterson decided to go for 2 instead of go to overtime without Mayfield. Mm-hmm. One of the weirdest decisions I've ever seen Patterson make. And then Oklahoma held on and went to the playoffs. And then lost to Clemson, of course, because I had an Oklahoma future. What do you see in this game?
Did you have a TCU 630-1 that got, you know, beaten the pool? Never. I'm not going to get into it.
No, but I had Ohio State that year, so I feel good. I feel better.
All right. So when I first started capping this game, I thought, you know, OU is just going to run them out of the building, because I know off the top of my head that OU ranks in the top 10 in explosiveness and TCU ranks in like the bottom 10 in defending explosiveness. So then I get into the game that happened November 11th in Norman, and I start to realize that this game actually went under. It didn't go over. There was only 6 points scored in the second half total, and those were all scored by TCU. So OU was shut out in the second half. So if you get into, you know, some of the comments and you watch some of the tape, it's all of a matter that TCU didn't tackle in the first half. They missed assignments. They didn't do outside contain. Guards were pulling and setting traps, you know, and backs were just getting loose. And, you know, people were shoestring tackling. And it's a really shitty effort by TCU in that first half. In the second half, they came out and they shut them out. You know, Kenny Hill had a 27% passing success rating in that game. That is horrible. That's terrible. That is a really bad game. I mean, an average passing success rate's around 50%, and he had 27%. I don't expect that to happen again. So I don't think TCU is going to be caught off guard here. They were really flat going into Norman. I don't expect them to be flat. I think they're going to have their ears up and ready to go in this game. I make this game 6.5, and S&P Plus actually makes this 4. So it was offered at 7.5 at Sportsbook yesterday at a flat minus 110, and I decided to hop onto that. I would still play it at 7. I think you can probably get 7.5, 115 at a couple places. But, you know, TCU's the side I'm on. Whether they can win the game straight out, I don't want to fade Baker Mayfield right now, especially on what should be, I guess, a faster track down there in Arlington. But, you know, for me, I think, if you look at TCU second half versus first half in that Norman game, you can make a case here that 7's too much.
I would agree. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, saying that I'm – you know, TCU, I think, knows they're not going to the playoff, right? Mm-hmm. They win this game, which I actually like better for this, right? So they want to just spoil Oklahoma's season, whereas Oklahoma might be, you know, they're going to be up for this game, motivated and focused. But they might be like, all right, we're going to get to the playoffs. And, I mean, this is TCU's Super Bowl. I think Patterson's going to have them ready. I would mention that TCU, the first time these two teams played, what's his name? The running back for Oklahoma, Anderson went off, right? So he had, you know, 23 carries for over 150 yards. He had 5 catches for 139 yards. Mm-hmm. And he had almost 300 yards of offense and 4 touchdowns. Well, something to keep in mind for that game is TCU is getting back Traven Howard, their outside linebacker, senior leading tackler, this week from injury. He's missed the last 2 weeks, I believe. And he played in that game, but he was clearly banged up. It was known beforehand. He just wasn't as fast. He was missing tackles. He was getting ran over by Anderson. So, you know, Patterson said he's back this week. Nico Small, you're getting a defensive back for TCU. They're getting him back. So they're getting healthier on defense for this week. The one thing I'm worried about is Kenny Hill factor, right?
So, yeah, of course. You know,
a couple turnovers in the red zone. But this TCU defense is legit. The Oklahoma, I mean, everyone gives Baker Mayfield credit. You know, you'll hear about some of their skill players that are coming on. There's Anderson and Brown. But this offensive line is excellent. But TCU's defensive front is excellent as well and getting healthier. So this will be a great matchup to watch in the trenches. I like TCU. I think TCU pulls the upset, to be honest. So I'll be on them. I haven't hit them yet, but now that you said it's coming down, I'm going to make sure I get seven before this podcast is over.
Yeah, it's going to be an abbreviated CW9 this week. I'm not sure how many teams are going to fall into it, but I'm positive at this early in the week that TCU is going to be in it.
Yep, so we agree there. Next game we have is a rematch, another rematch in the SEC. So this is Georgia-Auburn. Auburn is laying 2 over under 48.5. They won the first matchup, as everyone remembers, a few weeks ago. They've beat number one teams in the last month. I think only two teams have done that in the regular season in the last 15 years. I think I don't even know. I think Stanford did it back in like 2002 and maybe Ohio State 2010. I don't know. I know that's been only two times in the last 15 years. I'll look that up. But Georgia has the revenge here, but like I said before, I don't really value the revenge angle in these conference championship games. However, I do value injuries, and Auburn has a big one in Kerryon Johnson, who I believe I saw is probable. He has that shoulder injury. Uh-huh. The biggest problem with that is that if he can't go or if he's not 100%, you know, they already lost Pettway for the year, and then his backup is hurt and listed as questionable. So their running back depth, which really sets up everything. And Kerryon Johnson's arguably been the best running back in college football over the last month. So Georgia, you know, this is essentially a toss-up. They're getting a home game, which has to favor Georgia. The crowd should be pro-dogs. But I'm assuming Auburn will have their support as well. You see anything in this SEC matchup?
Yeah, I fired on Georgia the second this line came out. BetOnline had this at 2.5, and I went into fire, and I was very happy that they moved the line on me, and I caught 1.5. So I actually did not get a good number at all. But it opened up 2.5, came down to 1.5 a little bit, then it got up to, I think you could have caught some threes at some of the sharper books out there. We're sitting at 2.5. 2 at a BetOnline and 2 in town in Vegas at a Cantor Gaming. Kerryon Johnson, you know, that was such a critical part of the game where he was out, the third string got out, and I remember Gus turning around looking at the sideline like, who the hell's going to play running back now for us? Because I don't think we literally don't have anybody on the roster. But, you know, if he's listed as probable, I mean, I think about that. I mean, Bryce Love's been listed as probable for 3 weeks, but, you know, he's not been able to really make a lot of cuts in a lot of games. He did have a couple sparks here and there, but, you know, you got to monitor what Kerryon Johnson does early in this game to find out how explosive Auburn's going to be. The Auburn blowout of Georgia and Jordan Hare, I mean, that's going to be fresh on the betting public's mind. I expect a very steady flow of Auburn money coming in at all points. You know, and that should give some value in the Georgia number, which I actually have Georgia favored as a 1-point favorite in this game and not as a dog. I think the game plan here for Georgia is going to be much different in the SEC championship as it was back in November 11th at Jordan Hare. Nick Chubb and Sony Michelle only had 20 carries in that game. And that's just not typical Georgia. If you look at anything that they've ever done before, you know, it's based upon the run, and their two star running backs, two of the best in the nation, only got 20 carries combined. That just doesn't make any sense. And what that did was is it put the Georgia defense under constant pressure from the get-go, being on the field more than they're used to. And then it also exposed the biggest problem on Georgia's team, which is Jacob Fromm in second and third and long situations. So what happens is if Georgia comes out and they stick to their game plan that they've had the entire year and rely on the advanced stats that actually got them to win the SEC East and get to this title game, things should clear up and be a lot better for them. If they decide to run the ball, you know, 40 times combined between Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, that will take pressure off of the defense. It will give them a blow, let them catch their breath, and it'll keep Jacob Fromm in more third and two situations where they can control the line of scrimmage, maybe against Auburn's defense, instead of having him in third and nine and trying to make a pass. So the Bulldogs rank 10th in rushing S&P. Plus, and they're 6th in rushing explosiveness. They have to lean on that. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, Auburn's offensive line ranks 93rd in adjusted sack rate. And that's something that, you know, Alabama just wasn't able to expose. Alabama's defense was not in a position where they could have got to Stidham all day. And, you know, so, you know, Auburn can be hit. Stidham can be hit in the game. And I expect Georgia to be able to do that, especially if the defense isn't on the field the entire time. So, you know, Auburn's defense does rank number one in passing S&P. So that plays into this. If Georgia is not able to run the ball, Jacob Fromm is going to get eaten alive like he did down in Jordan-Hare. But I think it's going to be a huge running game plan for Kirby Smart. I think it's going to be a completely different thing than what we saw on November 11th. And it's going to be much closer. And I'm taking Georgia in this one.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll be on Georgia. I'm going to wait, see if I get a three. I mean, the bottom line for me is that these teams, well, number one, just on the surface, it's hard as hell to peak like Auburn's doing for a third week, mm-hmm. you know, essentially against a top five team, three times in 4 weeks. But the bottom line is that you had this, they just played, right? So they just played a month ago, and now Auburn is more banged up than Georgia, right? You would agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
So Auburn has more injuries. But they just played, what was it, 3 weeks ago? Let me look at the exact date so I can say this right.
November 11th.
Yeah, so November 11th. So they're going to be playing on December 2nd. So, you know, it's essentially 3 weeks before this conference championship game. Georgia was laying 2.5 at Auburn. And now 3 weeks later, Auburn, who's dealing with injuries, is laying 2 at what you could argue is a half home game for Georgia. It'll definitely be a pro Georgia crowd. But even if it's just on a absolute neutral field with no home crowd advantage to either, you know, that's a 4.5 point line swing. And Auburn has major injury issues at running back. And if you want to know how important running back is to Auburn, that in that first matchup, when Auburn beat Georgia by 23, Kerryon Johnson ran the ball 32 times for 167 yards. And, you know, that's how they set up their play action and everything. Another thing I'd keep in mind is the Auburn return game, their coverage, their kick and punt coverage still is a major question mark to me. Now, this will be in a stadium where you might be able to get a lot of touchbacks, but on punt returns, something to keep an eye on. And as a former linebacker, I got to give a linebacker shout out to Roquan Smith, who I watched maybe have 30 tackles against Georgia Tech, who I bet, but he's spectacular. He's got to be the best linebacker in football. So I would agree with you there. Anything else to add on that one?
I want to give a shout out to the blonde that got stuck in the hedges after the game there, because that was one of the most
dying laughing.
Dead.
Yeah. I was watching that with my girl, and we were slow-mo replaying that back and laughing. So yeah, I would agree. I'm going to be on Georgia. You know, it's in a dead range right now. If it's sitting at 2.5, I'm going to wait and see if, you know, there's a lot of Auburn love out there. Maybe if Kerryon Johnson is, I think I saw a probable, but I'm not sure. If he's announced definite, I'm assuming that you might get a bump. So that's what I'm going to wait for. I hope that I can get a field goal here with Georgia, who I think wins the game.
There should be plenty of money coming in on Auburn. I don't know if it's ever going to get to 3 again, but it should be a very steady, you know, plow of Auburn money.
Yep. Fresno at Boise. You know, these teams played last week. This actually should have been my bet regret. I was going to bet Fresno and never got around to it. I just wanted to take the dog on the premise that I don't know what's going to happen in this game. Fresno won 28-17. The game meant nothing. I guess they could have hosted if they jumped in the Boise in the playoff rankings, but they didn't. So Boise will host this game. Boise is laying 9, which, you know, shows you how funny that what that game meant last week. Boise was laying 7 at Fresno. Now they're laying 9 at home. Over under 49.5. I don't think I want any part of this game, but what do you see here?
Yeah, actually, I already took Boise. I took Boise on Sunday on the Sports Action app. So, you know, shameless plug there. I love Boise in this game. I made it 11. It's currently sitting at 9, a couple 8.5 sitting around out there. I'm not sure how Boise got awarded this game, because tonight they weren't in the college football playoff rankings, but Fresno was actually, I think, 23rd. So, I mean, I'm not sure how Boise got this game. And then I did some research on Sunday, like at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm doing research for who's going to host this game. And I find out that the Mountain West Conference has employed like four computer rating systems that I've never even heard of before to decide who's going to host it. So Boise gets the nod, which goes against.
Wait, so it's not the college football playoff?
That's what it says on the Wikipedia page, right? So that screenshot that I put out says the college football playoff, whoever's ranked higher will host, right? And then it said, then it'll look at a head-to-head scenario. So I was like, okay, well, you know, Fresno won. Fresno's going to be ranked, you know. And then they said, and then a news article comes out late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and it says, no, we have four computer. It's in my Sunday morning coffee. It's ridiculous. It says, we have four computer rankings that will decide who hosts this game. And I said, that's completely not what's on the Mountain West Conference webpage rules about how who hosts this game. Fresno's actually in the playoff standings tonight, and Boise's not. So I'm not sure how Boise got this game, but
yeah, I just read it as you were talking. So sorry to interrupt you, but I'm a Fresno fan. I'm furious. I won the head to head. I'm the ranked team, and then they host right. it. But it had to do with an agreement that Boise made to stay in the conference, and there was a provision that they signed and agreed to with the Mountain West Conference that said if the teams ever expanded, if the conference expanded to 12 football teams, a conference championship game will be played at the home of the team with the highest BCS ranking as of a date specified by the Mountain West Conference. That date they specified was the last day of the year. So the rules were adjusted when the college football playoff replaced the BCS. The home team is the division winner with the highest ranking in the college football playoff on the last day of the year. Well, the last day of the year already happened but the rankings don't come out until Monday, so they went based on last week's rankings. But it did say if neither team is ranked when the regular season ends, or if one team is ranked but expected to lose that ranking, I don't know who makes that decision, which would have been Boise this year, then they use an average of four computer rankings, creating a BCS-like result. So that's what happened, how Boise is hosting this game. That's ridiculous.
It's like a bunch of bullshit to me. All right, so I like Boise in this game. I got it at 11 and sitting at 9, 8.5. Both teams are really good at limiting explosive plays. So the defenses, should have their say in this. But, specifically Boise is 9th and 12th in defending the rush and pass explosiveness. So I like Boise's defense just a little bit more in this game now that it means something. And they're hosting at home where I think they've lost once in the last 13 or 14 games. The big stat that I'm looking at here, Boise is 7th in the nation in third down conversions. Fresno is 105th in the nation in third down conversions. I think the number is a little bit tad too low. I'm going to be riding Boise in this.
Just to add to that, Fresno is right now is ahead of Boise in the AP poll, ahead of them in the college football poll. They won the head-to-head. They have the exact same record. Fresno played a tougher schedule, and Boise gets home field. Do you want to know who the darling of the Mountain West Conference is?
Do you give up before you even get off the plane? Are you like, well, shit, I got to go to Boise? What's the temperature? I got to look. I mean, as a football team, are you pissed off, or are you just out of the game before you even show up? I wouldn't even.
I don't know. I mean, you probably already had your fill of mashed potatoes. You're not even excited about that. So I don't even know.
And they might turn around and send you to the Potato Bowl after you lose this game.
Yeah. So I don't really have a feel there. I actually lean the under in that game. I don't really have a feel on the side. Big Ten and ACC are the Saturday night primetime games from the Power Five in the conference championships, and they are the only two that are not a rematch of a game already played previously this year. Clemson, I won't be betting this game, I'll tell you that. Miami at Clemson, or if I do, just make sure you take the other side. Clemson's laying 9.5-ish here, over under 47. And Wisconsin, which was at 7 on the look ahead line last week, I think that's down to 6 everywhere, over under 52. What do you see in either or both of these games?
Yeah, I'll be quick with Clemson. I think the number got away from where it should be. I've got it lined at 7, so it's up at 9.5. I would much prefer the 6.5 that I think was posted a couple weeks ago on this game. I'm not saying to back the Hurricanes, but that Pitt game was exactly the formula that's needed to beat Miami every time, which is protect the ball. They only had -1 in the net turnovers and control the clock. They had 36 minutes of possession compared to Miami's 24. So we've preached that for weeks. If somebody would just come out and play that kind of football, they'll be able to beat Miami. And that's what happened. So Clemson's defense, they're the key to this game. They bring a ranking of 6th in efficiency and 14th in limiting explosiveness, which is Miami's bread and butter. To me, the number is a little bit too high. I'm not going to end up taking Clemson. I'm not going to back Miami in the spot where I think they lose. For me, it's a money line piece that I'll put together with something else.
Keep in mind also that Miami for Miami, a key is going to be Michael Irvin, and that's not a joke. Miami lost one of their best players on offense, their tight end Herndon, for the year. He got hurt in the pick game. It just came out today that he's out for the year. He's having season-ending surgery. Their backup tight end, now starting tight end, is Michael Irvin the second. So he'll start at tight end. And that could have been a huge potential advantage for Miami because Clemson's really banged up at middle linebacker. Mm-hmm. They were down to their third string linebacker this week. Their top two linebackers were listed as questionable. Miami really could have exploited, over the middle of the field with a really talented tight end. So maybe Michael Irvin steps up, but keep an eye on the linebacker injuries for Clemson because they're really banged up there. But yeah, Miami's down one of their best targets on offense. They're already down Walton, their best running back, and Richards has been dealing with injuries all year. So Ohio State, Wisconsin, what do you see there?
Yeah, we're going to take Ohio State in this one. We do have some sixes. BetOnline is currently posting a minus six at minus 113. Cantor in town is a minus six. For me, Ohio State was listed as a 6.5-point favorite leading up to this game last week. They had a non-cover to Michigan, tough game there, and Wisconsin blew out Minnesota. And so now you can get the line, it's six, which I think provides a little bit of value on Ohio State. Wisconsin's toughest opponents all year were ranked in the S&P 16th and 17th, and that's Fresno State and Michigan. The Badgers have posted terrible grades in their games against Michigan, including a 35% rush success rate and a 23% passing success rate. Turnovers played a key role in that Michigan game. I know that was a game you had Michigan, I had Wisconsin, and I'm definitely the one that, had the horseshoe up my ass that day. So, Wisconsin could be beat in a few areas in the advanced stats. Their defense is 75th in power success rate. That's not good against Ohio State because that means they give up short yardage plays and they can give up a lot of first downs. Wisconsin's offensive line only ranks 88th in adjusted sack rate. They just haven't faced a defensive line that's been able to get to Hornibrook. So, these stats aren't really good for Ohio State. And, I don't know if JT Barrett's healthy or not, but what I saw out of Dwayne Haskins, I just take the job away from Barrett. I mean, that Haskins kid is just money. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw that Barrett is upgraded to Pro Bowl. Yeah, that Michigan-Wisconsin game, I guess that's the best team they played. Yeah, I think the turnovers were even. I think it's 1-1, but it was just luck all day. You have a punt return for a touchdown on a ball that was rolling around. You had a Michigan touchdown that was called that wasn't called a touchdown, even though they reviewed it. Odd. And then Michigan fumbled at the goal line. And Wisconsin was like completing third and 13 passes. Weird game. That team's a fraud. I hope Ohio State wins to get in for just the entertainment value and competitiveness of the college football playoff. There's no one outside of the state of Wisconsin, or even maybe a lot of people, maybe just in Madison. No one wants to see Wisconsin in the playoff.
They're the new Iowa.
Who cares with Wisconsin? They're not winning the national title. Let's keep them out. Go Ohio State. I don't know if I'll be on that, but we'll see. All right, let's get to three and out. So first, I'll have two questions for you on first and second down. Then we'll sign off here with a moneyline parlay. Playoff predictions. So who ultimately wins it all? I'll just leave it there and we'll see. We'll check back. I'll mark this down. Who is going to win the national championship this year?
Yeah, I was able to stick this in my little database today when I saw the notes for the podcast. I'm going to have Clemson as a one, taking on Ohio State as a four. I actually have Ohio State as the four seed, favored by 2.5, and I've got them winning that game. I got OU and Georgia heading out to the Rose Bowl. That game should be a pick, and based upon some of the advanced stats, I'm going to take Georgia in that game. So that would be an Ohio State and Georgia national championship game. Line should be a pick at this point. And I'm going to take Georgia over Ohio State.
That's mine.
No shit.
And I've been down on Georgia. You can play a recording that Fromm ain't ready was one of my three things learned, and Georgia can't win it all. But I just look at who they potentially are going to play and what they can rely on with their running game and defense. And I do think that they beat Auburn this week. And I'm not afraid of anyone in the college football playoff that they would play. There's not a dominant team this year, so it feels right. So I'm gonna go with Georgia as well.
Imagine how pissed off Alabama fans are gonna be that they don't get in the playoff and somehow Georgia wins an SEC championship and a national title without having to play Alabama at all.
Yeah, Seriously. All right, so that's our playoff. That's our, I guess that's our official Degen and Juice national championship prediction. So on second down, let's go through the Sun Belt quickly. So essentially, the Sun Belt doesn't have a conference championship. So they play, you know, the conference champion will be decided this week, and it most likely will be a shared conference champion. So there's three teams that are tied right now at 6-1 in the conference. And two of them play each other. So, you know, one of them's obviously going to go get a win because Troy is at Arkansas State. Mm-hmm. And then the other team that's tied at 6-1 is Appalachian State. And they're home against La Lafay. An interesting thing for La Lafay, Louisiana Lafayette, is they're playing to get to 6-6. So they should be motivated to also spoil App State. New Mexico State, they are playing to get to their sixth win on the season, and they're hosting South Alabama, laying 9.5. Some of the grosser games on the slate, Idaho at Georgia State. Georgia State's -6. I think Idaho's down to their 70th quarterback. I don't even know who's playing quarterback for them anymore. That game is disgusting, over under 47. And then you have La Monroe. Well, I'll pause there before we get to the grosser games. Do you have anything on the games that really mean something? So the your Troy and Ark State and your App State Laffy.
Yeah, nothing on App State. The line's legit. Ark State, I'm going to take I almost called them the Indians again. I'm going to take Arkansas State, the Red Wolves against Troy. They've won 4 straight in this series. The line is 2.5. I make it I make it 2.5, and S&P Plus makes it 5, and the line's at 1. So I'm definitely taking Arkansas State in this game.
Okay, and then I assume you don't like anything in Idaho, Georgia State, or Georgia Southern at Coastal Carolina.
You didn't mention Coastal. Coastal's off a bye, and Georgia Southern just promoted their interim to a full-time head coach. So I'm not sure how much they're really going to be into the game because they've been playing so hard for this interim head coach, and now he's got the full-time job. Coastal,
back-to-back, you know, road games, too.
Yeah, I mean, Coastal beats them in explosiveness on both sides of the ball, and I could just go into a lot of deep stats. It's like making up for a CW9 here that I think I'm going to have the chance in there. So, Coastal is the only other game that I like on the Sun Belt sked.
Yeah, something, and the other two games on there, UMass at FIU. What the hell is that game? FIU -1.5.
No way, no thanks.
I still can't believe UMass has 4 wins now all of a sudden, so their team total hit. I know we recommended that in the previews, although they look like they weren't going to win a game, but they've really came on here. That line's 1.5. I have no idea what to expect in that game. And the other game is ULM at Florida State. This game was made up so Florida State could get to a bowl, and Florida State's laying 26.5, around 27. Feels high to me. ULM is playing for bowl eligibility. So is Florida State, right? I think maybe ULM's now eliminated. No, ULM's eliminated. So they're 4-7 now. Florida State needs to win. They're going to win the game to go to a bowl. I really want Jimbo Fisher. There's a lot of things going on with Florida State. Injuries. Jimbo Fisher's apparently being wooed by Texas A&M.
Yep.
I mean, this is the state of college football. Florida State's not even bowl eligible yet. They have a losing season. This is who Texas A&M is trying to woo away. All I want to happen is Florida State wins, becomes bowl eligible, Texas A&M hires Jimbo Fisher, and then Florida State plays Texas A&M in a bowl. That's all I want. But what do you got here? Anything?
Yeah, it could happen. I like that theory. The number's too high. It's about 5 points too high. I'm not going to back ULM after that that bullshit underhanded wannabe prayer pitch. Yeah, ran back for a pick six. So the number is too high. Florida State should win, but do they care about covering, you know, 4 scores in a game that they just need to win to go to a bowl? No. So it's a no play for me, but yeah, it's too high.
Okay. And let's get into third down, and we'll sign off here with a money line parlay. I know who I'm going with, but I have a second one in mind. So if you steal my one I want, then I'll go the other way. So who do you got here?
I'm going to be bold as hell here, and I'm going to fade the lane train. I'm going to go North Texas +330.
North Texas +330, and I'm going with, said this before, TCU. I think they beat Oklahoma and spoil their season. I still don't trust that Oklahoma defense. So +330, and plus 230. And so that pays about 13 to 1. I think that's what it was last week. Of course, we're going to hit the one that is cannot be out in the world, in the universe. So hopefully we can hit that. That's the Moneyline Parlay for this week. Thanks for running through the games with me, Colin. Thanks for listening. I know that it went over an hour, but hopefully you split this up or listen to it all at once, because this is part one and two combined this week. Hopefully it helped you prepare for some of the conference championship games this weekend. Should be a very entertaining weekend. We'll have a lot more stuff out from the Action Network, so check out our newsletter if you haven't. And also on the Sports Action app, CW9, Six Pack, we'll have a bunch of coverage, not only for this weekend, but for the bowls going forward. And we'll catch you all next weekend on another episode of The Gen and Juice. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.